and welcome along to the podcast. I'm your host, Zain Nabi. I'm sure you never get bored of hearing my voice, but we love bringing you Africa's biggest braai, where we chew the fat around the beautiful game. We bring you the latest news, analysis, interviews, and good humor. So thank you for joining us wherever you are on the continent and beyond. It wouldn't be a podcast if I didn't have the galacticos of panelists a man could ever want. First off, I have Alistair Howarth, a wonderful African football writer, our cross-platform journalist, a man who has a new newsletter out there, but right now he's in Edinburgh. Laddie, how are you doing?
I was doing well until I heard that impression, Zain. Oh, dear.
That's a damn good Scottish impression, I'll have you know.
No, I'm doing... That's what you exactly. Definitely. You sound like a native. No, I'm doing well. I'm cold. I'm miserable. I'm wet. I'm everything I don't want to be, but, and I miss the Ivorian sun on my back. And
sure you do.
Excuse me. And the warmth that comes with that, but happy. I'm warm on the inside now that I get to be back with the pod and be joining with you guys again.
Warm on the inside, like you've had good whiskey. Well, that tees up our other guest. A man who is so well-respected in the education sector. He's sought over all over the world. He's a high-flying executive. But that's what he does in his day job. In the past, an African football legend who won the inaugural PSL. And by night, a man who plays as one of the finest right-backs in the over-40s in Essex. You'll never know. It's Courtney Freeze. Courtney, my brother, how are you doing?
I'm okay, Zain. We've lost again this weekend. So that is 14 games in a trot on the row, losses. So we're 14-1, as the Americans say, 14-1. 15 games played, one win, 14 losses. 14, and here's the brilliant part, 14 consecutive losses.
So I'm presuming your one win was a walkover, right?
Zain, actually, it was... What a victory. First game of the season, top of the table. We give it to them and then we just go on a brilliant run. I think, you know,
match fixing. Clearly match fixing.
People are throwing games, yes. But I'm well. And looking forward to the pod.
Amazing, amazing. Well, listen, guys, it's been an absolute feast on the African continent this past weekend, and we can't wait to get stuck into it. But for those of you listening out there, please, we'd love you to leave a rating, leave a review on the pod, post your comments below. If you're with us, please do that. It takes a couple of seconds. It helps us learn about our audience, and also it helps people find the show. So please don't forget to do that. But I'm going to run you guys through some of the main football action that took place. A lot of big games, a lot of derby games, and it's worth getting some of those results. So we had the Cairo Derby in Saudi Arabia, which we're going to talk about a little later, where Al Ahly beat Zamalek 2-0 in the Egyptian Cup final. We had the Rwanda Derby, where APR beat Ryan Sports 2-0. Villa beat Express 1-0 in the Kampala Derby. And in the Battle of Zimbabwe, Highlanders edge Dynamos 2-1. Also, just a short... crossing across the border in Zambia, Nkana beat Mufulira Wanderers 2-1 to reign supreme in that highly charged game. And in the Tunisian El Clasico, Esperance beat Etoile 1-0. Really tight scorelines underlying most of the derby wins. And then the cherry on top of a derby-filled cake was the 180th Soweto Derby, where Orlando Pirates won 3-2 against Kaizer Chiefs in a 5-goal thriller. Guys, there's nowhere else but to start in South Africa. What a game. And you have to go back to 2019 for a 5-goal game between these two Soweto Giants. Give me your impressions and your analysis, gents. What did you make of the game?
Well, Zain, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to go ahead with this. I tuned in to watch the game and I thought to myself, as you said, you had to go back into the past to see a 5-goal thriller. I didn't expect that. I didn't expect the quality on show. I didn't expect the entertainment. Firstly, capacity packed stadium, number one. So there we go. The stadium was full. And when I say full, it was absolutely jam-packed. But the quality on show and the gold and the controversial moments, I think there should have been 2 red cards. There was a tackle in the middle of the pitch. Hatchet man tackle. Definitely shouldn't have stood. Really, really difficult, really easy decision, but beautiful football all the way around. And some of the goals, eh? Wow. Some of the goals from the plays. Absolutely fantastic.
I think Courtney kind of summed it up. You know, coming into the Soweto Derby, we didn't have high expectations, did we? You know, it's not a derby that's ever really been a super exciting one in terms of the football on show and the kind of the attacking intent. You know, it's always been, you know, quite a cagey derby, one that means so much, you know, a derby that splits the nation in many ways. So to get 3 goals and 3 bangers, Labizzo's finish in particular, oh my goodness, check that out. Like 25, 30 yards out, crashing under on the underside of the crossbar. Even Ashley Dupria's 2 finishes, excellent finishes. And kind of like Courtney said, yeah, the attacking football on show, I think particularly from Pirates, was just excellent. I mean, they left themselves vulnerable at the back, as we saw. Chiefs kind of did some real good counter-attacking work to get their goal, particularly that second one. But I just think that kind of, yeah, the intent was really brilliant to see from Pirates in particular. And I felt like they really deserved to win. You know, plenty of controversy, as Courtney alluded to, you know, the use of Mark challenge, studs up on the shins, and you know, any day there's VAR, that's a red card. Same with that penalty shout when I think it was Castillo.
Well, let's get into it. So you're saying these are the moments that turn the game?
I was saying it was end to end. Let's just go there. Alice's will tell you. End to end, firstly, both teams at one stage were defending with 2 defenders. That's how the attacking intent was. Going back and forth, 2 defenders. There was a structure. But the teams were so stretched because the intensity was so high and the attacking intensity was so high. A real enjoyable watch.
Yeah, and I think it was interesting because me watching the game throughout, it felt like such a kind of crazy game in the sense that Pirates, for me, were the better team by an absolute country mile. You know, the attacking intent they showed. You know, we even saw Labizzo, a midfielder, playing at right back. We saw Dion Hotto, who, let's not forget, was banging in goals for Namibia at the AFCON, was playing at left back. And so, you had this incredibly attacking lineup going for it. But because of that, they left themselves vulnerable. They dominated. And Kaiser Chiefs kind of almost had a smash and grab in that sense. Ashley Dupria, two fantastic finishes, as we kind of talked about. But in terms of the moments, Zane, I think in many ways, fortunately, they didn't define the game, but I think they could have because, yeah, like that Yusuf Mart one, terrible challenge, should have been a red card. And then, yeah, the Castillo challenge as well. I think it was on Mabasa when he kind of pulled it back, clear as you like, just kind of chops into him and gets away with it. But it was, I think, in the end, you know, as much as, you know, we've had Kevin Johnson on this podcast, we're a big fan of him, you know, I think he does a lot of good work and he's obviously got a really difficult job at Chiefs. I'm quite glad that Pirates won because I think they were the team that really went for it. Some of the football that they were playing was really exciting. You know, the interchange, the relationships, particularly that left wing, you know, as we mentioned, Dion Hotto is not a defender. And that's partially why he kind of often left his center back kind of high and dry. But him, Mofokeng and Makaula kind of combining in that triangle looks so good. And then, you know, the man of the match, Maswanganyi had a fantastic game. I mean, bear in mind, there was 2 players in this game that scored a brace. First time it's ever happened in the Soweto Derby. And yet he was the man of the match. And it's because of how good he was. You know, he got that brilliant assist for the winner from Saleng. You know, lovely little scooped pass over the defense. But also what I really liked about him and his Pirates is they had a cohesive defensive plan as well. Yes, it was a bit naive in terms of where they were because they left themselves high and dry at the back, but they pressed really aggressively. And we saw that in their first goal. You know, it was Maswanganyi getting the ball, winning the ball back, squaring it in, and then eventually was laid off for Saleng, who kind of scored a really, really lovely finish from the edge of the box. And I think we have to say, you know, from my perspective, that Jose Rivera, you know, it's taken a little bit of time to settle with Pirates, and you know, they're still not the complete article. We saw how poor they were in the midweek against, I think it was Cape Town City, and how kind of up and down they can be, but when it clicks, going forward, they look like a really, really exciting team. And, you know, I don't want to look at the table because then it reminds me of how far off they are from the Sundowns, because there's no hope that anyone will catch Sundowns. But it kind of gives you a bit of hope that if Rivero can get this team playing, maybe next season, if they can get the right, you know, get the right signings in, keep a hold of their important players, that they can actually hopefully be the team that can challenge Sundowns, because boy, does the PSL need a team that can challenge the Sundowns.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
I'll also say this to you, just throwing this in there as well. Exciting game. And, you know, in games like this, sometimes not... But point I want to actually make is that not all the time you have teams that are at equal strength. And we know Kaizer Chiefs is going through a difficult period. On the field and off the field, they're going through a difficult period. Like, Kevin Johnson is not their preferred coach they want at the moment. Okay? And there's a lot of internal fighting in terms of who the goalkeepers are, and the goalkeepers not wanting to be in the club. And it's just a mess. Basically, the club is a mess. Okay? It's a mess with rumors. It's a mess with things that aren't happening good on the field. But Pirates didn't find an equal villain yesterday. What Pirates found is a team that ran hard and chased, but Pirates put them to the sword and put them to the sword with some fantastic goals. And it was also a very controversial moment in the game as well, with the assistant goalkeeper had a nasty argument with Kevin Johnson on the field of play, which was caught by all cameras. Now, because Kevin is a professional, because Kevin knows how to deal with things, has said, listen, people argue with each other, players and managers argue, but there's no way he's going to let that go. Absolutely. It was a highly disrespectful point for the way the goalkeeper spoke to him.
Well, listen, to keep the sort of managers' themes going and to build on what Ali had said earlier, you know, Jose Riviera becoming only the second coach in Orlando Pirates history to complete the double. Here is our quiz question. So for those listening out there, post a comment underneath if you know the answer. Who was the other Orlando Pirates coach to complete the league double? I'm bad at quiz, but I know this one because I've interviewed the man. So that's a little bit of a hint to tell you when he might have been coaching, when he might have been involved. I'll take your guess first, Courtney. Who do you think the other Pirates coach is? Deep breaths, deep breaths.
Sounds like he's about to take a penalty.
I actually can't think, Sam.
That's okay. We'll buy you time. Ali, do you want to throw a name out there?
Well, I do actually know the answer because I was fortunate. I'm fortunate to
All right, well, you're not allowed to answer. There we go. I'll tell you what, Courtney. You can go and write your comment. You can post your answer in the comments too. And I'll tell you at the end of the show if we write. But staying with him, as I said, only the second Orlando Pirates coach to complete a league double. I think it's the first double Pirates have done since 2009, which is, you know, a long time ago. And I have to make the point that it feels like Pirates have recently had the edge over Kaizer Chiefs. They certainly had it at the weekend. What do you guys feel about that?
Absolutely clear. Clear. Absolutely clear. They're ahead of Kaizer Chiefs. Chiefs are nowhere near the level of Orlando Pirates at the moment. Even if you looked at the stadium had more of, I would say, Orlando Pirates supporters than Kaizer Chiefs supporters. It just, and Pirates are just a different machine. They are not a machine that can challenge Sundowns at the moment. Hopefully, in time, they can, because the league needs someone to challenge their club. Definitely. But nobody has the budget to challenge Sundowns. But Orlando Pirates were absolutely fantastic. As Alistair spoke a bit earlier on, the transition with plays, the effort, getting back and forth, high-risk football, but also highly entertaining as well, which is the Sea Robbers tick box. Always want to entertain, and they were entertaining on the day. And Zane, some of the goals, I'm telling you, I can't remember the guy's name that won it with the what is his name? Alistair that got the winner, the cracker.
The winner. Saleng scored the first and the third goal, but it was Labizzo's one that was the absolute scorcher.
An absolute... If you see that goal anywhere, Zane, in the Premier League, you're saying, wow, the Premier League has got quality. He hit that thing. Zane. I think it's still travelling now, that ball. I think it's still travelling. That's how he hits it, Zane. What a goal.
Well, listen, we'll keep this going because, you know, we speak about how there's this huge chasm in South African football. It's sort of Sundowns, Daylight, and then everybody else. But the win for Pirates takes them to second. They're now 12 points behind Sundowns, but they've played three more games. So clearly it looks like Msandawana have this one wrapped up. You know, the Brazilians, the millionaires, they're too far ahead. But this was a huge win for Pirates. There was a huge crowd at the FNB Stadium. Does this still illustrate the fact that this is the biggest game, or at least the most relevant in sub-Saharan football? Would anyone agree with that assertion?
I think it's, for my money, it's the biggest, but not the most relevant anymore, if you see what I mean. Because, look, there's no doubt that these two teams are probably the only two teams in sub-Saharan Africa, maybe with TP Mazembe along with them, that have the kind of cultural cachet of genuinely international world teams. Look, Simba and Yanga, I think, are on their way to get there. They're you know, on their journey there. And, you know, we have a couple kind of older giants in West Africa. You know, you think of the likes of Enyimba, Asante Kotoko and things like that. But there's no doubt that this is the game. I mean, what other teams, you know, even in the world are selling out an FNB stadium? You know, that's 85,000-90,000 plus fans. You know, that is testament to the draw of this game. But kind of as we mentioned, you know, these two teams in many ways aren't relevant in the way that they used to be. And it's crazy. Like, imagine if you ask someone in like the 90s or 2000s, like, you know, there's going to be a time where it'll have been over a decade or almost a decade, I think 2015 when Chiefs last won, that both Pirates and Chiefs did not win the PSL. I mean, that is just crazy. And even just thinking in the last few years, like Chiefs coming fifth, eighth in the last, I think, three of the last four seasons, getting knocked out of the Nedbank Cup by Milford FC. You know, it is, as Courtney said, like they've become a bit of a banter club. It's a bit of a joke. And notwithstanding that one kind of crazy run that they got to the Champions League final, where they kind of somehow got past Wydad and then eventually were shown up in the final against Al Ahly when I think they lost, what was it, 3-4-0? You know, it has been a mess. Whereas I think kind of Pirates, hopefully, like we're kind of alluding to, have been on this path to kind of slight redemption, you know, particularly since Rivero's come in. You know, you think they won the MTM Cup in 2022. They won the Nedbank Cup last year. They came second last year in the PSL. And I think what we have to say about the PSL is, and what, one thing that I've enjoyed about the PSL, particularly this season, is we've seen the emergence of these other teams that have begun to compete. You know, we think of the likes of Cape Town City, you know, Supersport have kind of come back into things with Gavin Hunt. Yeah, Stellies have been excellent, you know, winning the cup and things like that. So it's, you know, this is the good side of it, I guess, is that when Chiefs and Pirates are struggling, it means that actually the PSL bar Sundowns is actually a really competitive, really exciting league in a way that I don't think it was maybe 10, 15 years ago. But the big issue that the PSL has is Sundowns, because Sundowns, as Courtney said, they can outspend everyone. Because they've been outspending everyone for so long, they can now also outperform everyone. Well, you know, they hire the best.
Question, doesn't it, Ali? How do these two giants, you know, how do they claw back that deficit?
They can't.
Yeah, I think it's hard to see it, but particularly because right now, for me at least, this is the most important time to do that. Because yes, the difference between, say, Europe and Africa in this regard is, in Europe, you know, you see these leagues with one team dominating. And what do? They get into the Champions League, they get a lot of money, and that just further increases the gap. You know, I'm thinking of the likes of Celtic and these kind of teams in Europe's kind of smaller nations. Fortunately, in Africa, for PSL teams, it's not the case, because it's so expensive to play in the African Champions League. You don't get the same prize money. But there's two things that are changing that. One is the African Football League, because suddenly Sundowns are bringing in, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 million dollars in prize money from the African Football League compared to the Champions League, and then B, once the Club World Cup starts, because you know Sundowns, bar anything catastrophic happening, are likely to be the third team to join Wydad and Al Ahly at the next Club World Cup in 2025. They'll make huge profit off of that. And suddenly that financial gap becomes just insurmountable between them and Kaizer Chiefs and Pirates. And so for me, the only way I see them clawing their way back to Sundowns is they have to make themselves relevant on the continent. You know, they have to say, okay, maybe we can't compete with Sundowns, you know, in the league. We can't go toe-to-toe with them over the season, but can we get into the African Champions League? Can we win those one-off really important games? I kind of almost think of it as like City-Liverpool. Like, City have this a huge amount of money, but what Liverpool have done so well is they built up this really well-run club with an excellent manager, and they've been able to win in those kind of more tournament-based competitions. You know, they've done really well in the Champions League where City haven't been able to. For me, that's where Pirates and Chiefs have to claw back that gap. But ultimately, Zane, they cannot afford to compete with Sundowns. And so they have to be better than Sundowns in every other department. They have to have a better academy. They have to be better coached. They have to be a better run club. But the issue is, as Courtney's alluded to, especially in Chiefs' case, is they're not. You know, they don't have great academies. Sundowns is the best women's team. Neither of these teams even have a women's team. You know, there's so few ways which they can call that back. And, you know, Pirates have done really well in getting Jose Rivero in. But, you know, what is the map for them building with him and beyond him? There has to be these structures in place and these long-term thinking, planning to claw that gap back. Because, look, it'll take decades, honestly, for them to be genuinely competing with Sundowns, bar something wrong going with Sundowns, bar Motsepe pulling out, whatever. But they have to start taking the clubs seriously. You know, they have to start running things properly. They have to start having in plans, you know, that go beyond just the 1 year, go beyond the 6 months. And that's really hard because these are two clubs with so much pressure, so much chaos, and have been badly run over the last 10, 20 years. And so honestly, it's really hard to see either of them clawing back that gap. You know, you'd have to ask someone smarter than me, more knowledgeable than me in football, but because I'm kind of scratching my head here with you saying it's hard to see either of them closing that gap.
I don't think they can, and I don't think they will. There's the easy answer. I think if you set a table in a boardroom with 20 men with ideas and had a brainstorm, they couldn't come up with a solution to claw back Sundowns. They could not. Sundowns are just too far ahead. They are just too far gone. Sundowns have played 17 games. Pirates have played 20 games. Sundowns are 12 points ahead. Now, you tell me that. They've played 3 games less and are 12 points ahead. You know, so you're not going to. You know what? This is going to happen. Sundowns need to retire and go somewhere else. It's like Usain Bolt. You're not going to beat him, so he has to retire. Something has to happen. He has to get old because the Sundowns machine is not stopping. They also don't only employ players from within the country anymore. Mm-hmm. They buy the best players in the country. And then they go and look for fantastic players, not in the European market. And they take them and they take them into South Africa. Sundowns are just so far ahead. And then secondly, and Alistair's touched on this so well, you know, women's team, coaching, youth team, they've got everything, Sam. Absolute. And we were talking the other day on after the AFCON, where we were saying, oh, Ronan Williams, there's a potential he may go. He's going nowhere because they're paying him a truckload of money. There's the other thing. They are so full of money that people like him don't need to leave the club. The money he's earning in South Africa, he could not earn that money in Europe. He'd never earn that money. So he'd rather stay. Sundowns are just too far ahead. So Sundowns have won the league for 24-25 already. They've won the league. I'll even go 25-26, 26-27, 27-28. They've won the league. So it's done. Everyone else is fighting for the other crumbs on the table.
I think, look at it this way. Let's compliment Sundowns on being well-run, well-invested, having great coaching and great players. But the wheel turns. Every dynasty changes. So maybe there's got to be a long-term plan because this is certainly something that isn't going to happen overnight. And potentially, overambition
actually,
when empires start to fall.
There's one reason how Sundowns could be caught. If you introduce something like financial fair play in South Africa, Sundowns can be caught.
So I think I think financial fair play, right, in Europe has been interesting because it's, if anything, it's entrenched the kind of rich teams at the top further because, you know, those teams at the top, they can generate more money than any other team. They can, so that, you know, when you close that gap of making things financial, no longer can a small team get a billionaire owner and compete with the top. You know, they have to be frugal. They have to build up. But the difference is in South Africa, Kaizer Chiefs and Orlando Pirates are such big brands commercially compared to Sundowns that if financial fair play were to come into play, actually, it would be a way for them to claw things back because suddenly they could almost spend as much because, yes, they don't make as much money in winnings and prize money, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But in terms of their marketing, in terms of their kind of fan bases, in terms of that, Sundowns is streets behind Pirates and Chiefs. And so I do actually think, you know, usually I'm not a huge fan of financial fair play because I think it's actually kind of almost makes things worse in a way. It entrenches the gap between the rich and the poor. And I think there needs to be more kind of redistribution if you want things to be competitive. But I actually think in the PSL example, Pirates and Chiefs are in a position where, again, if they're run well and something like financial fair play comes into it, suddenly their spending can be comparable to Sundowns, maybe not in the immediate, but certainly within a few years once they start implementing financial fair play. So I do think that is a good shout. And I know that's been a big conversation in South Africa is kind of, will they introduce it? When will they introduce it? How will they introduce it? And I'm sure Sundowns would very much like to push back against it, certainly in any way that stops them.
We've interviewed people on this podcast who have told us, not directly, but indirectly. Let's go back to Stanley Matthews. Oh, well, when Sundowns came in and they started looking at some of our players went because we can't afford to pay them the money Sundowns. There's point number one. Ronwin Williams interviews with us when he's at Supersport. The rumors start about Sundowns. We don't hear from him. A few months later, he's at Sundowns. 500,000 rand a month. Hey, my salary when I was playing at Manning Rangers was 1,500 rand. And that was at the end of my contract. The beginning, I was earning 990 rand. Hey, so it is absolutely crazy the spending power Mamelodi Sundowns has. You can close that gap by limiting their spending power. That's how you close that gap. That gap then gets closed. And we're not saying disable the club. No, we're not saying that. But put regulations in because all they are is a sugar daddy club with a guy that's got a lot of money. So if Zane got, you see the books in the back of Zane, I like them, I buy them. Alistair's saying he's got an, I like, I buy it. The painting on my wall, I like it, I buy it. He can buy anything. He can buy anything. So by him behaving like that, you then take all the resources away from the other clubs. How are they supposed to do well?
Sure. And listen, that's probably a podcast in itself and how we make our leagues more competitive. Are there ways we can do that with salary caps, financial fair play, limiting squads? There's a whole, I think, different ways you can get creative in doing it. But certainly, a great talker. As we round out the pod, guys, I think it'll be remiss for us not to dig in a little bit to the Cairo Derby that was hosted in Saudi Arabia. It was a huge derby. It was also the Egypt Cup final. It was played on Friday night, Al Ahly running away as the 2-0 winners over their rival Zamalek. Did my eyes deceive me, gentlemen? Or did I say Jose Mourinho there? Francesco Totti in a Zamalek jersey and El Phenomenon Ronaldo in an Al Ahly jersey. I mean, it looked like the stars were out to play in Saudi.
Who would have thought, Zane, that we would have been having the Egyptian Premier League graced by these guys? I mean, we know that we've had it on the international kind of stage. Jose Pesero is kind of one of Jose Mourinho's closest friends, and he's the head coach of the Super Eagles and took them to the final of the AFCON. But to see the special one himself grace an African club game. Bear in mind, it wasn't in Egypt. It was a thing to behold. But yeah, it was part of the I think it's the Saudi Winter kind of sports festival, and kind of part of Saudi's ongoing, you know, investments in sport and everything. You know, obviously they had the big Ngannou Joshua fight later that night, which Mourinho and Ronaldo and Totti were all at. But as part of it, yeah, they Saudi Arabia offered to the Egyptian FA to host the Egypt Cup final. And it, you know, it was a really good game. And you know, for those who weren't aware, it was also free to watch for anywhere in the world, which, you know, I'm always happy to plug when you can watch African club football for free without getting various less than legal streaming services. I'll put it that way. But yeah, it was a good final. As Zamalek were really good, actually. I thought they played really well, even though they lost Zizo late in the first half. But it was kind of a late bit of quality from Afshad and Imam Mashour, kind of both linking up for both goals, which saw them win. But yeah, I think it's an interesting idea, because we've seen this with Saudi, with a lot of European leagues. You know, we've seen this Spanish Super Cup, Italian Super Cup. We saw the attempted Turkish Super Cup play there before being pulled out. But actually, I think unlike those, in many ways, it almost makes sense from an Egyptian footballing perspective to take it to Saudi, because, you know, look, we all know that the last decade at least, football has been really hard in Egypt. You know, the government has really restricted fans, and so we you know, Cairo derbies with full stadiums are they're so hard to come by these days, and it's really sad. But to see it in, you know, in Ronaldo's Al Nassr stadium, you know, a full stadium full of Al Ahly and Zamalek fans, obviously it's not very far for them to travel, and there's a lot who live in Saudi and in the Gulf and in the Middle East. So it was great to see that. And I think the other thing that sweetens it for them was the prize money. I think usually the Egyptian Cup final winners, I think it's something like $30,000 to $50,000 is the prize money. But on this occasion, thanks to the generous Saudis, I think the prize money was $950,000. And I think the man of the match, who I think was Imam Ashour, got really $50,000. Big money. So almost $1 million for Al Ahly to win, and, you know, Al Ahly continuing their dominance of Egyptian football. But I did want to, before we leave it, I wanted to point out the wonderful quirk of the Egyptian Premier League, because it's so busy, A, the amount of games they play, but B, because they have so many teams that usually are in African club football, you know, Zamalek, Pyramids, and Al Ahly all were in it. I think Al Masri were in it as well in the Confederations Cup. But it means that currently, if you look at the Egyptian Premier League table, you don't see Al Ahly top. You see ENPPI. You don't see Al Ahly second. You don't see them third. You see them all the way down in 10th place, Zain. Believe it or not, Al Ahly are in 10th place in the Egyptian Premier League. Now, bear in mind, that's because they've only played 7 games and ENPPI have played 15. So if Al Ahly actually win their next 8 games, I think they'll be more than 20 points clear at the top. So they're still very much the dominant team. And Zamalek are actually even below them in 13th. But of course, if they win their games at hand, they'll probably shoot up into second or first as well. But I just wanted to throw that out there, as I think it's a kind of one of the beautiful quirks of the Egyptian Premier League, where it's kind of no team is ever on par with each other in terms of games played. It's always a bit chaotic, and it's always Al Ahly and Zamalek who are the ones who kind of have to play catch up in terms of games. But yeah, a very interesting football in Egyptian weekend in Egyptian football, as well as South African.
I don't know what's going on. I must be very honest, I don't know what is going on. All right, the Saudis are basically taking over the world. Basically, taking over the world. I didn't know sport was such a big thing in Saudi. I had absolutely no clue. Massive now. They've moved big players. They've got Ronaldo playing football in Saudi Arabia. Okay? They've moved the golf. The golfers are left. Okay? They've offered ridiculous amounts of money. The golfers are leaving the PGA to go play golf in Saudi. They moved one of the biggest derbies in on the African continent to Saudi to be played. So the 39th step, and you would know about this, Zain, that the English Premier League have been trying to do for years, to have a game of relevance played in another country somewhere else. These guys have done it. Ahead. It's gone ahead. They've already taken a step. Now, I was watching the other day, snooker is moving to Saudi. Okay? Just now, next week is going to be chess. What else? These guys are taking all sport in the market. I'm telling you, where is this money coming from?
And can I say, Zane, that the On the Whistle podcast is open and available for any Saudi sponsorship?
No, I don't want it.
Courtney, what if they place $950,000 on the table?
Alistair, we don't want it. We don't take gambling, so we're not taking oil money. We don't want it, Alistair. You know, I don't understand this whole market and how it's working. I really don't. Listen to you. How can that game, that cup final, be played in Saudi? I don't understand it. How did this get moved? Jose Mourinho, Francesco Totti. I'm telling you, Ronaldo doesn't know who Al Ahly is. He doesn't. He hasn't got a clue. He's never heard of him. But he's walking out with a trophy. Why is he walking out? Because he's there to watch what? He's there to watch a spectacle of a USFC fighter fighting a heavyweight champion that can't box. No, man. Now they got the crossover fights.
I think this podcast has taken a whole different turn right now. I think it's become the Courtney Freeze hot takes, which I'm sure will be just fun for a lot of people.
Listen, I must be the only man in the world that's happy about it.
In a sentence, and this is not to prolong it, Saudi Arabia has a real strategy around sports and international sports, whether that's in Formula One, motorsport, golf, tennis, a lot of investment in football. They gave us their upset win over Argentina, has been proved by stats and mathematicians and people smarter than me using formulas that it was the greatest upset in World Cup history. So there's a strategy there, and you know, the World Cup will eventually get hosted in that region, and pretty much saying I think they're on track for 2030. So you know, it's a country that's got a thirst for it. There's lots that's been written on it. Is it to improve their image, given there's been criticism around human rights in the country? There's also other experts who have said that Saudi Arabia have invested in sport because they have, this is a tool that can be used to communicate with younger generations, Gen Z, millennials, who are really connected with sport. So they don't always have to look abroad. They can see Ronaldo, Mane, Lewis Hamilton, Verstappen, all coming to their part of the world, and sport is a great tool to build relationships. People more cynical might say to keep the masses in check. So again, it's a very interesting one, and there's lots of literature out there. So go out, read it, make your own mind, see if you agree with Courtney, see if you'll take the money like Ali, or see if you'll try to present both sides like me, and we'll go there. But to bring it back to the Cairo Derby for 1 minute question, and this is some left turn, I feel we're going 180, but we're going to try. Al Ahly are set to continue their dominance on the African continent. It started under Pizzo Mosamani, friend of the show, and that's continued under Marcel Koller. I mean, can you see anyone toppling them, Ali?
Look, I think they've been brilliant in terms of the last few years, and the dominance that, you know, talking about, you know, Sundowns, Al Ahly are the template for how to truly be a dominant, you know, dynasty. And you know, you see some of the players that they're holding on to, the likes of Abdel Manim, who are, you know, definitely good enough to be playing in a top five European league, and players they're bringing in, Anthony Modeste, you know, they have such a draw now in terms of the quality caliber of player they can bring. And like you said, Marcel Koller has just been, you know, he's not really put foot wrong since taking over from Pizzo. You know, he's already won, what, three cups now in just like 18 months. He's won the league, on track to likely win it again. You know, they won the Champions League, came third in the Club World Cup. Again, stuff that Pizzo has done. You know, he's still got a ways to go in terms of, you know, coming on to Pizzo's legacy in terms of particularly the continental dominance. But I think also this last couple of years has coincided with a drop off from Zamalek, with a kind of real dip from the kind of biggest rivals. Traditionally, Zamalek are kind of capable of going toe to toe with Al Ahly, maybe not necessarily beating them all the time, but But I do think Zamalek are on the way up. I think you know, they've elected a new board that's come in. They've brought in Jose Gomez, a new coach who's, you know, bar this defeat, has gotten off to a good start. So I'm hoping that Zamalek kind of are able to keep challenging. And obviously we saw Pyramids, you know, breaking into the African club football. You know, it didn't quite go. Yeah, they were in Sundowns Group, weren't they? And they had the win away from home and the loss at home. And so that, you know, they've shown that they can, you know, tangle with the best, including Sundown. So I'm hoping that Zamalek and Pyramids, like, I know Pyramids are a controversial team and aren't very popular in the country, but I do also think it's good for competition to see a third team in there, not just the two. But no, look, I think Al Ahly are, you know, even in this Champions League, despite Sundowns winning the African Football League, I think Al Ahly are always going to be the favorites. And you know, it's them. They're the team to beat. Yeah, you know, when it comes to African football still.
Well, Al Ahly certainly set the benchmark. Great team. We'll wait to see if anyone can hold them in. I mean, we're like the Al Ahly of podcasts, you know, setting the benchmark on the African continent. But it would remiss of me not to end this podcast by going back to the trivia question I asked, which was, who was the other Sea Robbers coach, the Orlando Pirates coach, who has done the league double over Kaizer Chiefs in one season? Courtney Fries, we gave you some chance to think about it. We think you've posted your comment below. Who is your pick?
My pick is Eric Tinkler.
Eric Tinkler. Well, listen, that's not correct. It actually was a Dutchman by the name of Ruud Krol. He was the last manager to do that in 2009.
Oh, Ruud Krol. Oh, my God.
Not just any
Ruud Krol. Holland team.
Yeah, part of the Holland team.
The Holland team.
Player, man. Total football with Johan Cruyff.
There we go.
Playing with Bertie Vogts in Germany. Oh, man.
Well, listen, it's been a pleasure doing the pod with you guys. For those of you who got that right, listen, you guys are fundies and we'd love to have you on the pod. So send us a question, send us a voice note, find a way to get in touch so we can read out your comments and your questions. Alistair, Courtney, absolute pleasure doing the pod with you. Is it a date for next week? Same place, same time?
Absolutely, always. Zane. Let's just look at the time the FA Cup game between Liverpool and Man United is on.
We'll make sure to book it in there, but Courtney, you're buying wherever we are. So to our viewers out there, enjoy. Goodbye for now.